And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, fan of printed media. And the radio, of course.
Not a good day for you, then.
No, not a good day at all.
Not a good day for anyone. And we'll be talking more about that later in the hour. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will be talking about the national unity crisis, that is Alberta's desire to build pipelines, oil pipelines, that is, and the rest of the country's desire to not let them because we're just cruel like that. People are really sharply divided on this, but is there a way to reach a compromise? Especially in a time of economic instability and maybe too many mixed messages coming out of Ottawa. We'll talk about that. And then there was the sudden announcement of the closure of the Guelph Mercury tomorrow. It will print its last issue. According to Metroland, the Mercury is just too far gone in terms of advertising revenue and subscriptions to be viable anymore, which leaves a city of 120,000 people without a daily newspaper. So could anything have been done to save the Mercury? Even in this day and age, we will be joined by our close friend and ally, Candace Lepage. And Mercury freelancer Troy Bridgman will call in from the Hug a Mercury employee event downtown later in the hour as well to discuss all those issues and say goodbye to the Merc. And then we'll also try and touch on the strike of the staff at the Halifax Chronicle-Herald as well. But first, Lalash, Saskatchewan was probably not a town you'd heard of this time last week, but tragically, that changed when four people were killed and three more were wounded by a 17-year-old suspect who can't be identified because of the Youth Criminal Justice Act. And in the same week, we get a report that says the government has been discriminating against children on reserves, and... when it comes to foster care, they haven't been getting as much money as other kids who are in foster care. So, Scotty, should we really be terribly surprised when something this tragic involving kids on the reserve happens?
No, not at all. And, of course, there's a lot of layers to it beyond the shooting, which in and of itself is a horrible thing, as we would all agree on. But there are, of course, lots of circumstances leading to this. I think... it's going to be the true test of the new government, and I'm still saying the new government because it's fairly fresh, of the relationship between Indigenous people in this country and the government and the rest of Canada as well. Because I think they said, I had read that Trudeau is heading up tomorrow to visit the community, which is understandable. And but you know, is this will be the reveal is like, is the sheen off now? Is it, you keep talking about the honeymoon period. It may seem like a minor point, but as we know, most of the issues within these communities fall under federal jurisdiction in terms of the relationship between the rest of the country. It's that, you know, they're pretty much need to deal with the feds for most things, including funding due to the Indian Act. And that almost seems... like a minor point, but of course, all of the events leading up to this, we have a community here pretty much in the and no offense to anybody who lives remotely, but it really is in the middle of nowhere. It was a fur trading post, and then it became a settled community. One of the interesting comments I thought that came out of it was from I believe it was one of the chiefs there who had said that the change began. So this is an overnight thing from when they went from, you know, the sort of hunting, fishing, super traditional Indigenous lifestyle to not only resource-based, but, you know, wage labor, essentially, right? So, and this is the big, you know, the mark of success in the South, let's say, is do you have a job, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily the situation place like this. I think the unemployment rate is probably the highest, you know, very, very high comparatively. But not only that, and I wondered where I'd heard the name. I'd heard the name Lalash before. It was in the back of my mind. I was like, I know this name because it's a bit unusual. And I did a bit of digging back in time, and Lalash was one of the places, if not the place, that had the highest suicide rate. It was in 2009 where there was a string of attempts and successful suicides. and that was 7 or 8 years ago. I believe it was 2009, mm-hmm. 7 years ago. So as to whether, you know, is this a surprise? No. Is it anything new? Not really. There's many other factors at play, too, in that there seems to be, from the reports, there was a bullying element to this.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, you're trying to be sympathetic, but on the other hand, there's nothing – there's no way that this should have happened in terms of, you know, you don't deal with bullying in that respect. But it does seem that the, you know, a lot of the rules, let's say, that apply just sort of get thrown out the window in terms of, you know, just community establishment and structural things. So sad.
Yeah, I mean, when you read the history of this town, it's brutal. It sounds like Deadwood. It has a suicide rate 3 times higher than the national average.
And that's all the time, not just
that's not an anomaly. That's
no.
a statistically ongoing matter of fact. It's a town of 3,000 people, too. 3,000 people, but they don't have a lot in terms of recreational establishments. They don't have like a grocery store. They don't have a mall. You know, they don't have movie theaters, like a bowling alley. So, I mean, when you think about this town, it's a town of 3,000 people, literally at the end of the road,
mm-hmm.
bumped up against the lake, kind of right there along the Saskatchewan-Alberta border in the northern part of the province, where things are few and far between generally. And so you're talking about high unemployment. If you're lucky enough to get a job, then perhaps that dissuages the boredom a little. It's drugs, gangs. There's not much else to do, unfortunately. And then this, you know, like as you were saying, goes back to the Hudson Bay Company days, and, you know, them coming in there and, you know, the white man taking charge. And then even in the early part of the 20th century, what was it called? The Northern Administration Act, which was the community was already established then, but they were sending, you know, white people from the southern part of the provinces up to places like LaLoche to take the job of administrating the place. So even then, you're subverting the local power and local knowledge, and you have the white man telling the Aboriginal people what to do. And there's just no animus. There's no sort of incentive for them to take control of their own destiny or impose what they want to do in terms of tradition or adapting to modern traditions or what have you. I mean, and we're kind of talking around. I mean, this young man who can't be identified is what he did was horrible, and there's no excuse for it. But I think what we're seeing is the start of continuation of a national conversation we're having now in terms of that, you know, we've created these conditions in these places, and it's been a long time coming, these chickens coming home to roost.
Well, that's directly where it ties into the child welfare and child services angle, because you would think by the sounds of the problems that this person has, referred to as the black sheep, he didn't really talk, he was picked on. Those are the kinds of things which, you know, exist everywhere, yet there is a support network for that kind of thing here. And when I say here, like in the settler community.
Mm-hmm.
In Guelph, there is the possibility of some sort of remedy for that,
mm-hmm.
if need be. But in places like this are so isolated, and it's not – this community isn't alone. There's so many.
Right.
One of the statements I heard was that there are hundreds of places like this, and that's just, you know, how it's evolved, and we're at this point. And some of the solutions, too, I thought were, I wouldn't say odd, but it was like, yeah, we're going to flatten the school. And I'm thinking, don't flatten the school. It's like one of the only things that's there. If anything, you could turn it into, if you really wanted to change it, turn it into a memorial center, build another school. I mean, it is, by rights, just a building. But to sort of jump in and say, yeah, we're going to flatten this. The other thing was, too, is like it's also not – well, it's far, but it is fairly close to Fort McMurray. And one of the suggestions was, well, you know, if we build a road to Fort McMurray, it'll be all kinds of opportunity. People are leaving Fort McMurray in droves. So it's not as if that's going to solve it either. And, of course, the sort of ultimate, not ultimate solution, but something has been suggested, like just shut her down, move out of there and move elsewhere where there is opportunity. But of course, that's kind of oversimplifying it. If it is traditional land, then it's, you know, you don't want to leave home and shouldn't have to. So this is that sort of delicate, where do you find the balance? Where does the government get involved without, you know, imposing the kind of traditional old-fashioned Indian Act style, this is it, you're going to have this much, many square feet to live on, and we're going to send you $4 a year, whatever the heck it was, never amortized for inflation and things like that. You know, we've talked about this lots before. The two white guys. Well, no, we have had guests before, but you know, when this does come up, it always seems like we're just sort of like, and not even skirting the issue, but it's, you know, what is our input on it? And I think we're in agreement on a lot of things, but that's the burning question. It's like, okay, Trudeau is going to go up there. His father probably went up there. Gretchen went up there. Yeah. Then they came back, and then it's on to the next thing. So will that change?
Yeah,
it has to change.
Well, there's signals that it is changing, and certainly in a couple of months, the Liberals have been in power. The Aboriginal file has been very much on the front burner. Mm-hmm. The missing and murdered inquiries, sort of warm up acts, have been going on the last month. The consultations with survivors and victims has been ongoing. But I mean, this is not a thing that can be fixed with like one singular law, one stroke of the pen, one act of parliament, and that's the real trick to something like this, is that, you know, when there's a new report delivered or a tragedy committed, that's when it moves back to the front page, as it were, and there's always this yo-yo, at least in the past, between going back from the front page to no page coverage of the issue, just because it's a systemic problem, and it's been systemic for centuries, and that just compounds it in terms of what can you do. And yeah, it's like that. Those answers are simple. Let's tear down the school. Well, I understand the sentiment, but you know, that seems wholly impractical. That's not going to help anybody because they haven't even reopened the school yet. I don't think the shooting actually even happened in the school. It happened in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, granted, this is probably pretty traumatic for the community, but I mean, almost a week later and, you know, it's still not open yet.
And it's the same with the oversimplifying of, well, let's create jobs. Mm-hmm. It seems the median income up there is something like $14,000, which is below.
Yeah, it's about 10,000 less.
Yeah, the poverty line. There's no way you could exist on that down here realistically.
Yeah.
But you think about it, when you have a community of it's 2,600 people and they're surrounded by all kinds of resources. At one point, there was uranium mining out up there. And like I said, Fort McMurray. There's no reason as to why they can't not only be integrated into that, but how come that they're, you know, they're not getting the services provided for. And as I said with the child welfare one too, that you know, that's been picked apart and they said, look, you've been neglectful in this. And yeah. I bet you if you go through every single portfolio as well beyond child welfare, whatever it is, even the jobs portfolio, they'll be like, you've been shirking these duties as well. So it's, you know, how many reports? I bet you there's a report from 10, 20 years ago that says the same thing. You know, well, that education is failing up there. Yeah. No one finishes school. That child welfare is crazy. Addiction is out of hand. Poverty, unemployment, which is that's it. Addiction, poverty, unemployment. Big three.
Yeah. And yeah, it is the same deal that when these reports do come out, there's never any. You're surprised in the report that, like, hey, you're actually doing pretty well in this portfolio. It's always – it's much, much worse than you think it is. And our expectations for it are already seismically low. But, yeah, again, this is not an issue we're going to be solving anytime soon. And so we will move on to another issue we're not going to solve anytime soon, and that is pipelines. There has certainly been a lot of discussion about the construction of pipelines in order to get Alberta crude oil from its place in central Canada to places where it can be exported across the sea in BC and in the St. Lawrence River. But there is a bit of a snag lately. About 83 Montreal area mayors came out and said they don't want the Enbridge East or the Energy East pipeline by Enbridge to pass through their backyards. Line 9 protesters are constantly shutting down Line 9. They are breaking in wherever they can and turning off the valves. And letting the chips fall where they may. There's ongoing issues with First Nations people who do not want to give a blank check for pipeline construction through their land. The Liberal government has just passed new pipeline construction standards that will probably set back projects already being prepared. And on top of it all, we have Rona Ambrose, interim conservative leader, calling it a national unity crisis. I mean,
it's so laughable.
That's hyperbolic.
Yeah, it's always a, you know, it's just like the he's just like his father when it comes to the West.
Yeah,
and he's
too busy swanning with celebrities. And
that's right. That was the comment. Is that he's busy getting he's too busy getting selfies.
I was writing the show notes. And I put in swanning. I thought, there's no way this is a legit word.
Swanning?
It turns out it is.
Old school.
I never heard it used before.
Swanning.
It seems
like a vaudevillian term or something, right?
Yeah, it just seems like a cranky old man term for a middle-aged woman to be using in 2016. Are you swanning with celebrities? Oh, the horror with the selfies.
Google where she went to school. That might reveal it. And anyway, we've got that back and forth with Rona Ambrose. And, of course, Trudeau's comment was, well, we're not getting it done in 10 weeks, but, you know, it took you guys 10 years. What happened? The problems are the same.
Yeah.
And in terms of – they're pushing it in terms of jobs. You know, the conservatives are like, well, it's going to create all these jobs. And it would seem – I was reading a report from the Pipeline Association that during the construction, of course, it creates a lot of jobs. I think the estimate for pipeline, the Energy East, was 14,000. But, of course, once it's built, it's only about 900 people.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them are involved with pipeline monitoring and making sure the thing doesn't leak? And that is one of the big issues, right?
Right.
In that it's like, okay, build the pipeline. And I think the Liberals aren't in disagreement that the pipeline needs to be built. There are lots of people, as you said, the Line 9 protesters, and that it's like, no oil. We need to get out of the carbon economy.
Right.
But at the same time, in this 2016, everybody's, it's 2016. It's 2016, things still run on oil, right? So if you build this pipeline, it's like, well, why don't you build one that doesn't leak? And if it does leak, you can. There must be tech available that could stop that leak pretty darn quickly. But of course, you've had all these incidents where it's like, well, it leaked for 19 hours and, you know, the alarm was going off, but we just ignored it because we get false alarms. That is the problem.
Yeah.
And if they're chucking billions of dollars at this, they should be able to do it. And I think I made the comparison before, the whole, you know, delivering people into space.
Yeah.
And bringing them back for the most part, right?
Yeah.
How come you can't build a pipeline that doesn't leak?
And it's the most, the most predictable problem.
And it always leaks right into the river.
Yeah,
right? It leaks right into a community.
The worst possible place to leak. Yeah.
An indigenous community. It ends up there. But we've seen it too. And Nigeria is a perfect example of like the worst case scenario for getting oil out of the ground. I mean, it's a disaster. And this is what people want to prevent.
Right.
They're saying, oh, no, it's Quebec just being Quebec. No, it isn't. I think the argument about it crossing that many bodies of water, and that is a really good one.
Especially the Great Lakes.
Absolutely.
You know, that's...
You pollute a Great Lake. I mean, I wouldn't say we're done, but, you know, Guelph has its own water supply, but it's all connected, right? So it's not going to... I don't
think
they're wrong.
Everything flows downriver.
Exactly. And I don't think they're wrong to... I don't think the 83 mayors, whoever it was, are wrong to sort of stand up and say, we want this. And, of course, within minutes or 2 days, this set of principles was released to great fanfare yesterday by Catherine McKenna, the transitional assessment rules. And, of course, it's being – the conservatives will say, well, it's just another layer of bureaucracy. And it was interesting. It was Ezra Levant from The Rebel was on asking a question. It was the one that got the sort of chippiest response from McKenna at this – the press I watched a bit of it. The press conference seemed to go on forever and interrupted Power and Politics, by the way. But that's another
story. Not a loss.
No. Well, it depends on your opinion. But, I quite like the panel. But anyway, will these issues be addressed? Will the company smarten up? Will they ever get their pipelines built? They need to follow the regulations. So rather than It's just sort of, well, we're going to create a new process and a new regulatory regime. That report came out that said there was huge flaws in the regime, in that it sounds like it's self-inspection. It's like, can you guys go have a look at this? And they're like, okay, Caribou, lakes, whatever. And then 5 years later, it's like, well, we didn't really get around to that. That is nonsense.
Well, the Environmental Commissioner of Canada said that the NEB's process for pipelines was negligent in terms of monitoring pipelines and monitoring the expectations for pipelines, and they were negligent. And, you know, these are the people we trust to sort of oversee all this. So that's not good. And yeah, I don't see there's anything wrong with taking a minute and saying, yeah, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider. First of all, there's the environmental factor and the fact that pipelines do leak. Yes, okay, accepted. Then there's the fact we don't want another Lac-Mégantic thing.
Mm-hmm. You don't want exploding trains.
Right. And so
and that's the argument. It's like, well, we don't, you know,
well,
that,
that's the good counterpoint for, for pipelines. But on top of that, there is, why are we rushing to build pipelines now? Why are we rushing to build pipelines for oil nobody wants?
That's exactly it. The market's tanked. We were talking about this last week. It's like, it's not getting any better.
No, exactly. And then on top of it all, there's this, I think it's a false narrative on the part of a lot of people from Saskatchewan, Alberta, that this is an East versus West thing, like the back in the Peter Lougheed days. Peter Lougheed versus Trudeau Sr.
Sorry, Peter Lougheed?
Peter Lougheed, yes, thank you, sorry. It wasn't my time.
Peter Lougheed, an actor? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, he probably was.
Peter Lougheed.
Lougheed versus Trudeau.
Swanning around.
The first one, swanning around, exactly. that, you know, Peter Lougheed saying things like, oh, you know, Ontario can freeze and blah, blah, blah. We're, you know, we're going to get this price for our oil.
Go to hell, yeah.
And then, you know, you have Brian Jean, leader of the Wild Rose Party in Alberta, you know, acting all snooty, and this is Quebec, and they can give us back our equalization payments, even though that's not how equalization payments work. And then you have Denis Coderre saying, well, we're not going to take environmental advice from people who think The Flintstones is a documentary.
Oh, did he actually say that?
Yeah.
Recently? Like,
yeah, this week.
Ooh, I missed that.
Yeah.
Don't mess with Denny, eh?
Don't mess with Denny. And then, of course, you know, Trudeau has to go down there and say, dude, chill out.
And take a selfie.
It's cool, dude. Not bad as all that. No. Yeah, so this is a serious debate, and I think there are merits. Like, yeah, oil is a huge industry in this country. The previous government practically guaranteed that. But yeah, there are still a lot of economic concerns. It's not, you know, the market isn't there currently. And I wish Rona Ambrose had been this passionate when jobs were being lost in Ontario, all those manufacturing jobs, all that incredible economic diversity we used to have. I mean, it's not entirely the Conservative government's fault for not standing up for them. I mean, that's the way the cookie crumbles. But they certainly weren't proponents for protecting those jobs either. And it seems like they have one sector in mind that is what Canada is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And,
but, sorry, just
– No, go ahead.
It was their fault in a lot of ways in terms of the way the rules were and companies were coming up and making all kinds of – this is
right.
– I'm sorry, I'm completely deviating from pipelines. But just to make the point, and I can name them off the top of my head because I went to a couple of them, Caterpillar.
Yeah.
You know, you name it. U.S. Steel, where it's like they make all these promises, just drain the factory of its resources, and then take off.
Yeah.
Because that's how the corporate world works. Yes, this is the point in the show where Hertz blames it all on capitalism. You were waiting for that point, weren't you? Well,
everybody drink.
There it is. Yeah. This we should come up with a drinking game for our show because, yeah, some things don't change. I'm not going to change. But there's truth to it, too. And the companies, I'm doing air quotes again, take another drink because I do that a lot, too. It's the same thing. There, I, you know, the royalty, was it, Notley was saying about how they're going to examine the royalty rate.
Right.
You know, if they put it up like a fraction, it would still bring in a lot of revenue. But it's like, how dare they raise the royalty rate? It's going to lose jobs.
But it's
it
a pittance.
Not.
It's a
it
pittance.
It is a pittance.
Compared
so what's
to what?
0.5% of a pittance is still a pittance, right?
Right.
Jack it up. Let's go Norway, man.
That's the flip side of it, too, is Kathleen Wynne is now on the side, like, if we want to make this happen, we're going to get paid. And that was came out of her meeting with
and
Notley.
BC did that, too. And they're like, how dare you? And it's then, like they're affronted by it.
But then you have Alberta hoping that there's going to be a change in policy with the presidential election in the U.S. Hillary Clinton's come out and said, no, she's not going to you know, sign off on building Keystone. Donald Trump said, yes, I will build Keystone, but we're going to want 25%.
There you go. Because so, he's a businessman.
Yeah, he's going to get the best deal.
Yeah, anyway,
everybody
drink
Trump impression.
Yes.
But yeah, so everybody's wanting a piece of this now. It's So when Alberta oil does come back and when oil prices go up, they will inevitably go up again. But when this comes back, everybody's – is. We'll see.
That's the big – everybody's – that's what they're praying for. If they're praying for anything, it's like, oh, my God, oil go up, please.
Right. But I mean – yeah, I there is a lot of legitimate concern, and there's a lot of empirical information to say there's legitimate concern about, you know, befuddling the lakes with dirty oil. And, you know, at the end of the day, what can you live without oil or water?
Exactly.
And that's something people are going to have to come to terms with.
And that's why the Indigenous leaders are on top of this, and the environmentalists, of course. And, you know, any farmer rancher would have to be, whether they're mm-hmm. pro-oil or not.
Right.
And, of course, the rest of us that drink water, which is everybody, you know, it's huge. I didn't realize how long it was, 4,600 kilometers.
Yeah.
From Hardisty or whatever it is to the New Brunswick refinery. It's massive. And that's, you know, that is a lot of sort of I's to dot and T's to cross in terms of getting it together. And then I didn't realize that pipelines are strictly federal jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So not only that, they're crossing all these provinces. You have to deal with them. There are many, many parties involved, probably more than we've even could even touch on. And that's why it takes so long. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you waiting so long? Just build it. It's like I said, if you build it and it won't leak and it doesn't interrupt migratory routes and that kind of thing, then
right.
Everybody would be for it. If it's not pouring oil into your backyard, you'd be like, yeah, sure. I mean, of course, the extreme environmentalists and people that want to get rid of a carbon economy, rightly so, would say, no, don't bother. But in the meantime.
Well, there are people who will always say, like, we don't want to build them at all. But there are a lot of pragmatists out there who are like, you know what, let's make it as safe as humanly possible.
And that's the liberal approach, I think.
I think that's the approach. But I just there's no guarantees out there. And just, you know, from the conversation, saying, just build it.
Ask anyone in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. That is not an attitude that I think favors the side of caution that the opponents to pipelines really want.
No.
See, I told you we wouldn't stop pipelines either. And then we are going to take a break here for some music and some PSAs, and then we will come right back with some guests to talk about the very sad loss of the Guelph Mercury. So you are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Hi. My name's Karen, and you're tuned into Guelph's volunteer-programmed campus and community radio station, CFRU 93.3 FM.
Brother's heading that way now, I guess. He just read something, made his face turn blue. Well, I got nothing against the press. They wouldn't print it if it wasn't true. If you wanna know about the gay politician, if you wanna know how to drive your car, if you wanna know about the new sex position, you can read it in the Sunday papers.
And that was Joe Jackson from his album Look Sharp. Ah, yes, vinyl, the newspapers of sound. But, of course, it's coming back, too.
Maybe newspapers, well.
Guess what that song was called? It was called Sunday Papers, a hit for him in 1979.
Good choice, considering there was no Sunday edition of the Mercury.
That's true. But now there's no edition at all.
Yes, that was... That was gut.
That was sort of a segue, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. You can't print a paper on the Sabbath. My goodness. New York Times did
Well, you can if you're Jewish.
Good point. good point. Anyway,
we're trying to introduce the thing. Yeah, okay. Anyway, I want to welcome to the studio again, like I said at the top, our friend and ally, Candace LePage, who is a social media guru. You're also currently the newly elected president of the Green Party Guelph chapter.
Yes.
So welcome back to our little show here, which we know you are an enthusiastic supporter of.
Sin 48, rock and roll.
At Sin 48.
At Sin 48, yes.
As long as the rock and roll is there.
I said this before, Candace taught me how to tweet, so I'm still working on it, you know. So yeah. I don't know my ats or my ands, but anyway.
So, yeah, we have Candace here, Troy Bridgman, who freelanced at the Guelph Mercury for years. He will be joining us from the group hug, which is currently going on in downtown Guelph. The Mercury, from what I gather, has just kind of wrapped up putting together its final issue. Rob O'Flanagan, who's been a reporter for, I think, 17 years at the Mercury, just tweeted out that he posted his last story for the Merc, which was, oddly enough, about this being the last Mercury. And if you didn't see Rob's interview on CTV,
something heartbreaking.
So in case you weren't aware, the Mercury is printing its last issue tonight, Beyond the Stands tomorrow, after 149 years. That's it. Metroland has pulled the plug. Who's angriest about it and wants to talk about it first?
Well, I think it's probably me, because I've said before I'm still a pro-newspaper kind of guy, but it's difficult to... You know, it's difficult to accept, but it's one of those things you say. At the same time, I've been kind of negligent in my paper buying, in that I think as soon as we got Wi-Fi and a steady connection, my sort of Saturday and Sunday routine of going walking to the shortstop and getting the paper, be it the Mercury or whatever the heck caught my fancy that day, Globe and Mail, Star, you name it, it pretty much ended. So, am I guilty? I suppose, but I've also sort of gone with the times in terms of it's like, now my father, who is 83, like his generation is still newspapers. And I think where he lives, they are up, some of them are up in arms because they're not going to get the Mercury anymore.
They're not going to get local news.
Yeah. So they're going to have to, go ahead.
To be fair, none of us are going to get local news anymore.
Yes.
Yeah.
With or without the print.
Yep.
Now, I struggled with what my response should be to the announcement, because clearly most people in town know me as a person who is a digital native. I think everything should be switching to digital. You should be, expecting to find everything there first and trying to monetize there. But I think that so many of those things don't need to be said right now, because everybody knows that. I mean, that's not really the point right now. It's stuff we should have been talking about a year ago, 2 years ago, 5, 10 years ago, even. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's just a time for mourning. You know, it's just like this is the result of the new paradigm.
Mm-hmm. Yep, many, many factors involved. And I love the point that you made on your blog in talking about this, saying that, and this is kind of just beyond the physical paper itself, that, the way things are evolving, it's just kind of stating the facts and sharing your opinion isn't really journalism. And that, in a lot of ways, I think is the hump that we need to get over in the new journalism and the modern times. And that includes beyond radio, too, the land of podcasts and whatnot. I mean, come on every week and we never say that anything is sort of beyond our opinion, although there's two wonderful news gatherers right beside me here. I'm just a guy talking pretty much, right? So it's like
But
you know what I mean, though. There are times when we sort of get fact from somewhere. All of ours generally, at least mine. Yeah. I'm that guy reading the newspaper or the blog or whatever and just sort of doing my own filter on it and the spin.
Yeah. At best we're pundits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are. This fellow's in the trenches all the time at City Hall. So Guelph Politico, check it out. That to me is a fantastic point. It may even be the point in that when you lose something like the Guelph Mercury, where there are other people in the trenches getting the local stories and presenting it to you, and I think probably my favorite one this week was the ATM getting ripped off from the Manor. Yeah. I mean, sounds ridiculous.
National news.
It sounds like it, but at the same time, a very Guelph story. Yet we won't get that anymore. But of course, everybody that I work with was looking at it online.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but somebody had to write that. That's,
exactly.
That's
precisely.
The thing, right? Like, I do – I don't necessarily mourn the death of a print newspaper. But there is the problem that because they haven't figured out what the next step is, we're ending up with the death of journalism. And that is a real serious problem.
Well, Andrew Coyne said something interesting. He said in an editorial, people do not value the thing we are selling at a price sufficient to cover its costs. So, and where will we provide it? And, of course, one of the things you know, I saw during the week, Vintage Guelph, the Facebook page, posted a thing, Mercury's Ending. And then somebody posts some smart aleck going, well, who cares? It takes 2 minutes to look it up on the phone. It's like, yeah, well, it comes from somewhere. Your phone is not omniscient.
The phone just gets the news.
Yeah.
Just stick it out there and it'll tell you stuff.
It's not the machine from Person of Interest where it has eyes everywhere and is giving you this information. Somebody is out there, as you said, in the trenches. And, I mean, that's one of the things I've been struggling with is, like, I'm one guy. I can't be everywhere the same way that a half a dozen reporters that the Mercury employed could, as well as being overseen by editors, as well as having people doing the technical end of things and putting together the actual paper and posting stuff online. That's 26 people. When you hold a Mercury in your hand, that is the sum effort of 26 people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, forgetting the one story, if you want to look up what Cam Guthrie did yesterday, you can. But, I mean, what brought that to you? The hard work 9 to 5 every day of 26 people.
Absolutely. And part of the problem is, too, is that there are old school media I'm trying to think of the right name. It is a business.
Yeah.
Like the New York Times. The New York Times now has 1 million subscribers online. They've been able to get eyes on the page. They've got people paying for it.
But of course, the New York Times, though.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. But they're a huge player. Where does the little New York story go, right? It just goes wherever – say Village Voice, that kind of story I'm thinking about is the one that, will get lost in the and of course now, to a great degree, the Guelph story will be kind of lost. A lot of us are hoping to keep it alive in some way, and that's what we're, furtively trying to figure out at this point. It's like, who is going to cover this beat? Will it be the Trib? Will it be some awesome in the trenches blogger types or whatever that are going to go after that and be sustained by the subscribers, whether it's because subscriptions don't maintain papers anymore. This is the problem. It's been that way for probably 30, 40 years where it's like once they get hooked on advertising and then they expand and then, think of the Star and the Weekend where you have two wheels sections and a condo section. It's like nobody needs all those sections. But you get this gigantic thing and you're hoping that there's eyes on those pages seeing all the things that are for sale.
That's what people think.
And somewhere there's a news story in there.
People think that's automotive reporting. No. That is gift wrap for car
and
ads.
And it's an ad. And in itself, some of the reports, quotes, are
advertorial
as well.
Pages. That's the thing. The sort of digital-first news medias are, in almost every case in Canada, are still based on an advertising model. We just don't realize it because it's what's called native advertising. So people complain about the BuzzFeedification of journalism because BuzzFeed makes their money by writing sponsored stories and doing it really, really well. But because they do that, then they also get pretty good stories, frankly. And like Vice Canada is doing a fantastic job of video journalism. And it's, again, because they're still monetizing through advertising.
Well, it's also worth noting that in those cases, you're talking about predominantly young Turks who are coming into a system where there isn't union staff and where there isn't contracts, where there isn't decades and decades of infrastructure behind it. So they can kind of make it up as they go along.
Yeah, well, innovation is not really encouraged in a traditional
business. No, you're absolutely right. And I think the Guelph Mercury is a prime example of that. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this the other day when we were having coffee that, there was hardly any Twitter presence. It was, they would throw up, this is what's on the Mercury website right now. Go check it out. But there's no real conversations. There's no real back and forth.
To be fair, though, they've also been dying a slow death for the last sort of 7 years. So a full-time staff for journalism of 5 people is not enough. And people will say, good riddance, there was 2 pages of original content. Well, you find...
Listen, I don't blame the people at the Mercury
at all. No, absolutely not. They were doing the best they could, I think.
Well, that was something still, that, like you say, that's what Chris Clark's comment was, that it was like he said, I think it was, I could sense trouble. Mm-hmm. And he had left. So
in the Force?
Yeah. Is that really? Did he quote Yoda there? I don't know.
I don't know.
Probably.
No, but you just did.
He sensed trouble.
It was no, I think that's a direct quote. Yeah. I sense trouble. So. Trouble I sense at the paper. But, and if he's seeing it, I mean, if you're embedded, you're right in there.
Yeah.
And speaking of trouble, too, I think the battle – we're going to touch on it briefly. The battle – we'll call it the battle going on at the Chronicle Herald in Halifax.
Oh, yeah.
Not only one of – I think it may even be the oldest newspaper in Canada. And the Halifax Typographical Union, which by its name alone will tell you that that's been around for a long time.
You thought the Toronto Press Club was archaic.
Yes, remember
we talking about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So. Highballs. Let's have them. And it seemed that scrap will not end well because – The kickoff for the owners was to lay a bunch of people off, which is a really kind of slimy move when you're in a strike position. Now, it seems that's been rescinded.
But came the writing hours after.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like it was
when that
there.
Happens, the writing is on the wall. Your card is marked when that happens. They're saying they're sending you a message, however many it was. I think it was 18 or 20.
It was 18.
They're saying, okay, you know.
But it was like 12 editors. It was like the whole editorial staff plus photographers.
It's like, yeah, we're just going to get from somewhere else. Where is that somewhere else?
When money troubles happen, though, the immediate reaction is to cut costs. And again, it comes to this place where it doesn't really breed innovation, right? Instead of cutting costs or instead of two sides fighting each other, they should be putting their heads together to figure out what is the new model.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, what is – they're saying that the Guelph Mercury is going to have an online presence. Do you guys have any notion of what that's going to be?
Well, it's not going to be people putting out new stories digitally.
Or is it just going to be a name?
I'm sure it'll just
going to be like a name and people dump stuff there.
I
think it'll be Waterloo Record content.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Probably.
So we'll be getting lots of Kitchener stories.
If anything,
Cambridge
stories. Yeah.
Maybe one Guelph story, like if the ATM gets robbed or something.
Well, that's something.
Something big-ish.
If you look at CTV Kitchener, the only time they come here is when it's a big story, like if a national politician is here, if it's salacious, if it's silly.
And they do a bit in depth with the university in that, but I think it's something you need to call them in and say, please cover this story because we think it's big.
Yeah.
And I guess they can pick and choose.
Like if somebody at University of Guelph won a Nobel, they'd come out. Or if, you know...
Yeah.
We set a record for most cats in a lab or something.
But you're right. It's mostly like big car crashes, right? Yeah. It's like, big car crash. Let's go.
As a person who has had to work on the other side of media where I'm constantly sending press releases out and trying to get attention, I will tell you that the CTV news is actually the most responsive that I've worked with out in the region, I would say, outside of Guelph. But that in itself is going to be a problem that I think people will only just start realizing next week when it's their business anniversary and they go, who do we tell? Mm-hmm. How do we tell
Snap
people?
Snap Guelph will come take some pictures. But,
I'll find out a month later that I missed a party.
Sorry, Snap Guelph, no offense.
No, they do a great job at what they do. It's not to report the news.
It's not news. No, it's – yeah.
No, that's that's not. It's an entirely difficult situation. Can we talk about what's going to be missed? Because there's an interesting thing. Tony Saxton, who covers the storm for the Mercury, he's going to be dropping the puck tomorrow night. They've invited him to drop it, which is nice to us.
Yeah, very nice.
But who's going to be covering Guelph Storm games anymore? I mean, it's not my cup of tea. But you go to the Sleeman Center. Between November and March, that's a full place. There are a lot of people who care deeply about the storm. And
Well, it'll be Rogers for the most part because the games
Rogers
are covered.
Just shows the game, but analysis or covering trades and managerial moves, I mean that stuff matters in sports too.
Do you think the Trib is going to expand? I've heard not at all. Eh? So they're not going to make it just that little bit bigger with that one extra story and maybe the sports that you're talking about.
The Tribune's never really been the place either, much like Snap. The Tribune's not as much for news. It's kind of highlighting community. And I think that that advertorial section they have is a huge moneymaker, the two-page spread.
Yeah, so, you mean the city pages or this? Because
there's eight different businesses. Like they'll do the downtown,
and then they do a spotlight on something.
Yeah, Yeah.
But I got to say, I mean, they do – there are times where there is an in-depth, mostly City Hall story. Like,
mm-hmm. Right.
I can't say that I haven't not found out city things about the you know, about the city from the trip. But it's the degree because, mm-hmm. you know, the default, everybody's default that wants to find out about Guelph goes to the Mercury, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't have Rogers Cable, so I couldn't watch a Storm game if I wanted to.
Right, but part of it's a timing thing.
Unless
right?
I went there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You can always go to this limit.
Well, I'm not going
to
go there. I just want to watch it on media.
Yeah, but part of it's a timing thing because, you know, remember the budget last fall. The two main budget meetings were a Wednesday and a Thursday.
Yeah. You miss
it.
Mm-hmm.
So that cares. Information comes out on a Tuesday in the Tribune, and that's kind of what it's going to be. It's, you know, for some people, like your father's friends in the nursing home, they're going to be waiting days to find out the news or what news they do get.
It's going to arrive by a gyrocopter. Or
we made that joke.
I'll
last
just
week.
Tell them to read Guelph Politico, and they'll be like, "Is that on the internet? Oh my god!
You know what?
What is this internet?
We laugh, but I went to the New Year's levee for Liz Sandals and Lloyd Longfield, and I was looking for people to appear on camera for a video I was making about, you know, what people wanted their politicians to do in the new year. And the first guy I asked was an older guy. He's like, "I don't got time for computers and internets and blah 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 and going in the tubes and
here's a typewriter."
Yeah. So I mean, we joke about it, but this is cutting
true.
Out so many. This is a community with a lot of old people, and these are the people who are going to be losing out.
And we love them. They should listen to us. I was going to ask you, Ken. This is a question for you. I was trying to sort of devise in my mind or sort out where do you think demographically is the line? Because I know I had a paper route, and I'll tell you how old I am.
So did I.
You had a paper route too, and then the paper routes disappeared in the name of cost savings. Mm-hmm. And of course, they said safety, and then we don't want kids collecting money, right? So, I mean, that was my first job, was paper route. Mm-hmm. So now, what do you think the line is? And I'm sure it's a bit flexible in terms of, like, I know that 20-year-olds don't buy newspapers.
Yeah, but you can't – I mean, it's hard to give a demographic because there is a bit of a psychographic attitude towards it as well. Mm. So, for instance – you used to buy the paper, mm-hmm. you say, right? But but now you don't. But I suspect there are still some people who are in your age category who do, you know, especially if you like the crossword.
Well, I was thinking that.
Right?
Yeah. Like something as simple as that. How
do
you do that?
To be fair,
print
there are other things.
You print it, right? Like you print a crossword from somewhere.
But I would say, the fact that there are only 9,000 paid subscriptions in a city of, what are we, 120?
Mm-hmm.
I think
higher now.
Sort of gives you the idea. And to be fair, it really does not make sense to keep a print edition for that few amount of people.
Yeah.
Right, like I hate to be rude about it, but you cannot run a business by not, you know, by trying to appease one sort of small group and leaving everybody else. And that's kind of what was happening. They were just continuously trying to figure out how do we do this. It's like, well, you can't do that anymore. You have to do something completely different.
Because we haven't talked about all of those people, too. Not only is it just the paper, it's everybody who delivers it. It's every person in the corner store. That corner store across from the Woolly, the only newspaper that guy has is the Mercury. He just keeps a few on hand. He doesn't have any of the others. He just has
–
he's like, I have some Mercuries. I went in the other day. I was looking for one. And he said, I just have the Mercury. I was like, well, I read it already. I read my father's copy. Right. So – but now – so, yeah, where do we go with that? That is – I guess that's the burning question.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. But on the other hand – okay. The thing is, there's been a lot of talk the past couple of weeks because of what media has become – about what business models are working and what business models aren't working. And the fact of the matter is there's no set business model anymore. There used to be that, as you were saying, the advertising, that was kind of what it was all based for. So on the one hand, it's kind of really upsetting that there's no path for success anymore. There's no, there's no kind of tradition to inherit and then put your own spin on it. On the other hand, I mean, for myself and other people who might be looking at media startups, there's tremendous opportunity here because there is no one right answer. And if you are of an entrepreneurial spirit and you have a certain amount of creativity and fortitude, the possibilities do exist.
the question is, I think to go back to what you were saying in the beginning, is the loss of the craft. And yeah. I think – and that's something I myself struggle with, that there is a craft to this, that there is tools you receive from the people when you walk into a newspaper as a young buck that you receive from the people who have been doing it 10, 20, 30 years in some cases. That's what's going to be lost. And like, yeah, you can open up your laptop right now and start a blog and call it GuelphNewsSite.ca. But
done.
Done. Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can start a news site. You can do it. It doesn't mean you can do it, if that follows.
Yeah, anyone can do it. Doesn't mean they can do it well. That's what you're saying.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a real craft to it, and I think that people don't realize that. And I think part of it is because most of the news that people consume day to day really is just facts and figures. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what you need. And it's only every once in a while that you really need a story distilled for you.
Yes.
Like, for instance, the court case in Toronto, Sammy Anton case.
Sammy Tim, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody was confused about what does this mean? And it really took a lot of journalists to write pieces, mm-hmm. sort of think pieces on it, to really make it make sense to people and for people to not realize that this guy got off without doing, you know,
attempted murder of the murderer.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's problems, but it's not as confusing as it seems when you just lay it out. And it's at times like that that people are really going to miss.
And that's also that. I mean, that kind of clarity comes from people who can sit in a courtroom day after day because they're being paid by their paper.
Yeah.
Who understand the criminal justice system. And I just know from my own experience of sitting in court a couple of days on one trial that it. I mean, there's some heady stuff there to try and unpackage. And I mean, it's almost in its own language. Mm-hmm. So you do need those specialists. Anyway, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, it looks like Troy wasn't able to call us.
I'm sure there's a lot going on at the group hug.
Yeah, so. For sure.
The Guelphiest way of saying goodbye.
Any final thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. I'm first for final?
Yes.
Yeah.
The guests always go first. Yeah.
You know, it's I still just keep coming back to so many people are kind of like the knee-jerk reaction. Are you surprised by this? It's inevitable. Of course it's going to happen. And I really think that people need to have a little bit more respect for what was lost. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are also going to start realizing, outside of just job losses and security losses, that the community itself has really lost a lot, and we'll start realizing that in short order.
And I think that's why we're seeing the outpouring that we are. Mm-hmm. Not just because Guelph is the Guelphiest place. There is that there's that sort of vibe here where it's like, well, we're happy we've got a paper, and now if I understand it right, who was tweeting earlier that we're the largest city?
I think
without,
Mark McKinnon sent that.
The largest city with our own without our own daily.
Yeah.
That could change. I mean, there are possibilities there, but I think our job is to not only keep doing what we do with this old media of radio, which was going to kill newspapers back in the 20s, right?
Mm.
When it became so widespread, and then TV was going to kill it. But I don't think you can ever completely kill information. And it's the quality of that information that we need to make sure, whether it's the new media or however we're doing it, stays to a certain level. And hopefully people will appreciate that and somehow reward it. How that's going to be, I don't know. Barter? I don't know.
We'll see. I mean, in the meantime, we'll of course send out our love and appreciation to everyone who's worked at the Mercury now or in the past. And thanks for all the hard work. As for us, we'll still be working hard next week here on Open Sources. Our website is opensourcesguelph, all one word, .com. You can find me at Open Sources on Facebook there. You can find us on Open Sources Newswire on Facebook at @OS_Guelph, and our Podbean channel, Guelph Politicast, where you can hear all the old episodes of Open Sources, old and new. Candace, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
On behalf of Scotty Hertz, I'll just say DJ sounds good to me. Coming up next at the top of the hour here on CIFRU 93.3 FM, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.